Thank you. Good morning, yes, morning still, everyone. lost track. Today I'm going to do a small snapshot of the Queensland demonstration prep study. And before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge all the participants that were members of this study and who also those who volunteered to be part of the embedded monitoring and evaluation study. I'd also like to acknowledge the 25 study sites and all the staff that were working there. Many of you are in the room or at the conference, in particular Darren Russell and the team at Cairns who are responsible for the day-to-day management and operationalisation. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, in particular Sarah Bell, who helped put this report together and the slides and analysis. So briefly, what is QPrepped for those who don't know? QPrep, we had a rolling enrolment starting around 7th of November in 2016 with funding up to 2,000 positions. We collected data at three monthly clinical visits and through a series of surveys as outlined on this slide. In 2017, we got additional funding for another 1,000 participants, and they were enrolled with an exit point of the PBS listing on the 1st of April. So that began of an exit of the 598 that were the QPrep X's, as we called them, and following that, there was also a natural attrition of the other participants out of the study. In May, the Director General of Queensland Health decided to actually close the study in its entirety and cease funding in the June of 2019. So we had around 1,260 participants that we began exiting, and the last one left us on the 30th of November. So in the exit survey, we collected intent to use post-study, and in the six-month post-survey, we collected data on actual patterns of use. So what I'm presenting today is the information from people that completed both the exit survey and the six-month survey. So that was 209 people in entirety, and it's coloured orange here on this slide. So who were these participants? On the whole, they were Australian-born gay cis men aged between about 30 and 59 on average, and that was quite reflective of the overall QPrep participant demographics. They came from a range of study sites, both public sexual health clinics, S100 GP services, and most of them lived in the major urban cities of Queensland. Around 15% lived in regional areas of Queensland, which is quite reflective of our Queensland demographic spread. This slide just presents the patterns of behaviour, their sexual behaviour on entry to the study. And as you can see, again, this is quite reflective of the overall QPrep profile. Out of interest, of the total QPrep cohort, there was a statistically significant increase in the number of self-reported partners between enrolment and the 12-month time points. And there was also a statistically significant increase in the condomless anal intercourse in that time period as well. So if we move on to actual PrEP usage, at closure, 94.7% reported that they intended to continue taking PrEP post the study closure, and at the six-month point, around 90% had actually self-reported that they had continued to take PrEP. This slide just shows us a cross-tab of those that had intended to use and those that actually were using at that six-month point. And of the 11 that said that they intended to cease PrEP on closure, only six of those actually did. In total, 21 of the participants had ceased PrEP at the 6 months. When we look at the 20 people that did something different to what they said they intended to do, circled here on this slide, there was a statistically significant difference in the proportion of participants intending to continue PrEP once the study closed and the participants reporting PrEP use at that 6 month post time. If we now look at the intended to continue those that actually ceased use at 6 months, numbers are small, so we do have to be cautious looking at interpreting these results. But if we look at the 15 participants who said that they would continue and actually cease taking PrEP, the majority lived in a major city in Queensland. They had stayed at their study site, and on average they had been taking PrEP for around 18 months of the study. We had about a 24-month period study time frame. 6% of this group had actually reported condomless sex while off the PrEP in that period of time. Six of them had ceased PrEP immediately on closure of the study. reporting reasons for monogamous relationship, as well as reduced or no sexual activity as the two most common reasons. There were some structural issues around, you know, the need to continue to see GPs, as also noted as a point of difficulty. If we actually look at the six who ceased to actually said they were going to, they had the same reasons for ceasing. They were actually both all in monogamous relationships and were not sexually active. But when we looked at these two groups, both also agreed that they would restart if the circumstances had changed, if they got lucky and actually got sex again. So if we start to look at the barriers to accessing PrEP following closure of the study or under the PBS model, most of the participants we had survey data for had actually stayed at their study site. So not surprisingly, they had very little difficulty getting their script. Some of the difficulties we had at that time point were more in relation to workload issues within the clinic, because particularly in the public sexual health clinics, were very nurse-led models. So there was a significant work shift to the medical officers and requiring to do three monthly scripts, and so they're working around some of these issues. The majority also reported no problems getting a script filled, and majority of these were being done at a local community pharmacy, though some people did report some issues in relation to this. Just a point of interest, majority of the local public hospital pharmacies that where the study sites were located had actually stopped dispensing PrEP, and so local community pharmacies and online dispensing were the only two options to people living in those areas where they had stopped doing it through the public system. We also conducted interviews in that six-month period following, in July, August, with 37 study site staff and 13 participants across the regional areas to coincide with the post-closure survey. While we found there were some initial issues with accessing script being dispensed, this was primarily due to issues of stock supply and a delay in actually receiving the stock, with some participants reporting about a 5 or 7 day wait for their script to be filled. There was some, you know, anxiety around that in relation to potential unintended gaps in supply. But what we found is most of those difficulties have actually ironed out now as the local pharmacies have got a little bit more prepared and they have a recall system in place and things like that. The other issues also that we unfortunately haven't been ironed out as quite so successfully was around the preparedness and knowledge of the local pharmacist and staff to actually provide this the scripts. Following experiences of stigmatisation, inappropriate questioning, many of the participants described at the front counter in front of other customers, with one participant saying to me he felt very uncomfortable when he was asked, "So how long have you been positive?" in front of all the other customers within the pharmacy in a small regional town in Queensland. Interestingly, the majority of the... missed that bit. The other part with the interview findings, what we have found is that there is also reluctance of many of the Q preppers to go back to their regular GPs or any other GP in their local area. Many describe not being out to their regular GP and have not actually disclosed their PrEP use to their GPs. There are also common reports of limited access to bulk billing GPs, which was driving up the cost of access. And there are also concerns around the knowledge and the preparedness of many of the GPs in some of the smaller local, particularly the smaller regional areas, to prescribe PrEP. There is also a significant amount of concern among the participants and also the clinicians interviewed around the general sexual health knowledge of some of the general practitioners the participants were trying to access, with particularly around inadequate STI testing. With one participant, quite common across the interviews, as one participant explained, "They don't do anal swabs. All I ever get is blood and urine." Some of the interviewees also described GPs being unwilling to prescribe PrEP and were directing them back to the sexual health clinics, which required in some of our participants to travel 50 to over 100 kilometres, which is quite a lot round trip. In particular, the confidentially perceived and enacted stigma was of concern to those living in the regional areas and accessing PrEP in local pharmacies. So if we look at PrEP dosing, majority of people were taking it daily, as our other speakers have said, we had around 6.9% who reported taking on-demand or event-driven dosing of some form at that six-month post-closure. As illustrated on this table, those who were doing daily dosing had quite high levels of adherence with to 6 to 7 tablets per week, with around 89% of people reporting that. There was no correlation between those indicating likelihood of using PrEP on demand and those that were actually reported using on demand. If we look at the likelihood of using PrEP on demand and we categorise the extremely likely with the likely, there was an association between participants reporting a likelihood to use PrEP on demand and their use of PrEP at 6 months post-study. Of the 188 respondents who are currently taking PrEP in the study, 27% reported having an STI diagnosed sometime in the 6 month post the study. That was 51 participants recorded 68 different STIs, with chlamydia and gonorrhea being the two most common. We did have six diagnoses of syphilis amongst this group, and around 30% of participants had more than one diagnosis in that period, with two out of the four, two participants actually reporting the triple threat of chlamydia, gonorrhea and syphilis at a diagnosis. These diagnoses indicate roughly a 25.5% incident rate for these STIs. If you're interested more in the STI rates or risk compensation adherence for the participants in this study, you can pop down and look at poster 77 for your lunchtime entertainment. If we look at STIs among those groups of the 21 who actually stopped taking PrEP, we found that 23% of those participants had actually had an STI following the closure of the QPREP. But interestingly, 9 out of that 21 actually hadn't had an STI test post-closure of the study. Now, 5 of those had actually ceased taking PrEP as they were no longer sexually active, so you could argue possibly didn't need testing. However, the reasons why the others weren't tested needs further investigation and exploration. So if we look at it, this slide just looks at those services where people intended to access their PrEP and those where they actually did. And it's suggestive of around 17.5% of our participants were accessing PrEP via a non-S100 GP. However, in summary, based on the previous results I've reported, this does suggest there's, you know, there's concern around the S100s, the non-S100 GPs' lack of knowledge and preparation around preparing, supplying PrEP. There was also concern about the rising out-of-pocket costs to some of the participants due to distances needing to travel. And there was also other, you know, there's other barriers around the stigma and the pharmacy access and financial constraints that are a concern in relation to ongoing uptake and continuation. We also have to consider, given the overall general rise in STIs, and particularly infectious syphilis, around the inadequate testing that's been undertaken in the primary healthcare setting, and also that level of non-testing among those people who had actually stopped PrEP. Now that PrEP is available on the PBS, one could assume that it's readily available to populations most at high risk, which is the aim of the PrEP, of the PBS listing. However, we do know there is some equitable access is more than just about accessing medication through the PBS system. The barriers remain for some of for some people. Overall, our QPrEP participants were majority health literate people aware of PrEP, aware of their HIV risk, and also those that wanted to take PrEP and actively had sorted out. However, we need to consider and direct our interventions to those populations and communities where those barriers still exist, particularly Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, those living in regional and remote areas of Queensland, people born overseas, individuals from lower income, and people who experience fear or discrimination and stigmatisation, as some of our clients already have. We need to recommend ongoing partnerships between communities, community partners, organisations, government, primary healthcare providers and pharmacists to try to ameliorate these barriers. Education of all generalist GPs, nurses, practice nurses, pharmacists, pharmacist staff from front end to back is recommended by most of our participants. Thank you.